The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Wednesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. However you're taking us in, we appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. It is Kelly Midland, producer number 9, so much more than a producer. Live from Bar Canada at the D, downtown Las Vegas. What's happening?
What's up? Big night in the NBA, Kel.
Big night, big morning. By the way, on the show today, speaking of NBA, JVT will join us to talk some NBA awards and beyond. We got baseball with Mark Borchard, Jason Weingarten, basketball with Will Hill. Also some baseball from Will, too. Michael Montesano on college hoops as well. Usually, though, let me just start here today. Usually, my Twitter timeline, my X timeline, whatever you want to call it. I'm never going to get off Twitter, by the way. Is multiple sports, right? People are throwing baseball, basketball, football, whatever. It's a potluck. Not last night. Last night, it was nothing but Wembanyama tweets because people expect me to talk about this. Because as you said, Kelly, now everybody's outraged about this, but you said it yesterday that when I started talking about it, no one was even willing to have a conversation with me on the show. All right, so Victor Wembanyama, this comes on the heels last night of Victor Wembanyama in a loss to the Nuggets, going 23-15, 8-9-1. So 23 points, 15 boards, 8 assists, 9 blocks, and 1 steal.
He had,
in other words, 2 assists and 1 block shy of a quadruple-double.
A quadruple-double. It's coming. It's coming. It's only a matter of time. I thought it was going to be last night.
If Ice Cube said you mess around and got a triple-double, what do you think he would have said about getting a quadruple-double?
I don't know. I thought that game was going to go overtime and he was going to get it.
All right, so let me just... here's what I'm going to try to do. I'm going to try to minimize the anger, and I'm just going to try to do this by fact. This will probably fail because I'll probably crescendo. Most stocks this season. Stocks, the cool term now for steals plus blocks. Victor Wembanyama has 321 of those. Next is AD with 248. Anthony Davis, way behind at 248. Wemby's blocks alone would be next at 235, by the way. And then Chet Holmgren back to the stocks at 225.
The crazy part about that is I don't even think the vast majority of those have come in the past 2.5 months, too.
Where would Rudy Gobert, presumptive defensive player of the year, be, you ask? I know I asked it. 188. By the way, the 252 blocks, by the way, Wemby's at 250. He should be at 252, I think, on blocks, not 235. But his blocks alone, maybe it's 235.
Get it together, Wemby Muse.
Either way, more than the last three 252, last three defensive players of the year combined in blocks, 252. Wembanyama currently with 235. That's the last three defensive player of the years combined in blocks, 252. Wembanyama with 235. By the way, he's the first player with 200 blocks, 200 plus blocks in a season since Gobert 7 years ago. Last player with 300 plus stocks, and remember Wembanyama has 321 in a season, AD back in the 2017-2018 season. He has more stocks than any of the last 9 players in their defensive player of the year winning season. Still 6 games left in the regular season. By the way, if you wanted advanced metrics, and I don't know that you do need them, but if you did, something called defensive box plus minus, Wembanyama 3.2, Gobert 1.7. Basically doubling him up, almost. And then to the question, because these are all counting stats, the question of, oh, yeah, well, how much did they all play? Well, Gobert played 69 games at 34.1 minutes a clip this year. Wembanyama, 67 games at 29.3. I've done the math for us. Gobert's played 389.8 more minutes of basketball than has Wembanyama. By the way, Wembanyama is now, 11-1 to win Defensive Player of the Year? Like, this thing has gone, it's going the other direction.
Let's see if that moves.
Then it should be. He was plus 350. 12-1. Oh, sorry, I sold it short. He was plus 350 at some skins, 4-1, I think, in legal shops a couple weeks ago, maybe even a week ago. And I'll say this again, and now I'm starting to get angry because I feel it getting in me. when he crushes the numbers next year, because he's going to play 33 minutes a game, let's say, right? Instead of the 29 he's playing now, and the team finishes, I don't know, 18th in defensive efficiency, the voters are going to say, oh, well, we got to give the defensive player of the year to Wembanyama. And poof, just like that, the whole narrative of, you know, got to be on a top defensive team to get the award's going to vanish in thin air. Period.
I will be betting him MVP next year at any price. I don't care what it opens. I know how unlikely it is to win. That game last night was the peak of where I've seen Wemby's skills get to. And yes, it had something to do with playing Jokic, but he was incredible. He blocked Jokic four times.
Four times.
He made Jokic dunk three times, which, just, I'm going to put it like that, because Jokic never
knows.
Dunks.
He knows.
Why does he need to dunk? Yeah. Because there's a tall Frenchman coming to block him.
Again, this is not like a disagreement on football awards, you know, Brock Purdy versus Lamar Jackson. Everybody sort of understood each other. And even the people like myself who liked Brock Purdy as the guy using advanced stats, when he had the four interception game, we all waved the white flag. We knew it was over. Same thing with Spencer Strider versus Blake Snell, National League Cy Young last year. Those of us who talked about the advanced stats and how Striders were so much better than Snell's, and Snell was a ticking time bomb, and Strider just needed enough time for his to manifest. It didn't happen. And so we understand why it went the way that it did. Strider didn't even get into the finalists. This is insanity. Absolute insanity. So I was prepared to come in on the show today, and I was prepared to say, Brian Windhorst, Tim Bontemps, Zach Lowe, all you got awards in this market, use your platform for good, not evil. Chas v'chalila that you should talk about something besides the Lakers. And then I find out this morning that Brian Windhorst on his pod says he is finally voting for Wembanyama. There you go, Wendy.
I don't know if he went as solid as that, but he kind of hinted that's where his vote's going right now. And yes, Tim Bontemps and Tim McMahon are not very happy about it.
Chas v'chalila that you should talk about something besides the Lakers. By the way, once again, ladies and gentlemen, I have wrapped up the coveted Sephardic Jewish demographic. All right, so the other thing that happened this morning, I just don't want to talk about it anymore because it's so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous that Wembanyama is not the favorite in this, and that it's going the other direction. I may add more to what I already have. Now, also long awaited, the ESPN NBA MVP straw poll. This is Bontemps, right?
Yeah, this is the final straw poll.
This is his thing. There are some things to talk about here. Not at the top, though. Nikola Jokic has a comfortable 300-ish point lead when you talk about first, second, third, fourth, and fifth place votes. Remember, it is a tiered point system. Nikola Jokic over Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who just stopped scoring 30 a game. He might be dinged up.
Yeah, he is.
And so I think that's correct, right? Jokic should win his third in 4 years. Shai Gilgeous is second. Here's where the interesting part comes. Luka's third. By the way, Shai has the most second place votes. Luka has the most third place votes. Obviously, Nikola has the most first-place votes. But the interesting thing about Doncic, he has only one first-place vote. One. A breadstick for first place. And I don't know, but when I hear people talking about MVP, at least in betting media, they give Luka way more of a chance, or have given him way more of a chance here. And this says he's got no shot.
Yeah, it was Sunday, Monday. The odds completely flipped. He had SGA drift all the way out to, like, I mean, he's 20-1 right now at DraftKings. Luka got cut down to like 550. So yeah, based off of this, I think that's one of the biggest things you can learn. No, don't go running to make Luka Doncic bets right now.
Giannis is fourth, got the most fourth place votes. Jason Tatum is fifth, got the most fifth place votes. All right, whatever.
Joke.
Sure. Here's where it gets hilarious to me, though. Not Brunson at six, but Anthony Edwards at seven. And the reason that that's funny to me is because Michael Wilbon keeps talking about how he's got Anthony Edwards second and always considering it for first. Here's Anthony Edwards' line. None in no first place votes. One second place vote. I think we know who that is. Third, none. Fourth, five. Fifth, five. So there you are on an island. Yeah, Michael Wilbon with Anthony Edwards.
Gil and I both started chuckling as soon as Gil walked in. I didn't even notice it at first. He's like, well, I guess that's where Wilbon's is.
I know where Wilbon's voting. Kawhi's eighth. Domantas Sabonis is interesting at ninth. He's got three fifth-place votes on a double-double tear. That seems a little weak.
We've gotten so warped by the triple doubles from Jokic and Luka and what Wemby's doing. I've been the guy not really jumping in on this too much, but like Sabonis' double-double streak, the most since the NBA-ABA merger, is one of the most at least talked about storylines of the NBA season. And just because we don't really care about double-doubles anymore, I guess, it's really sad to me, though, that he's... Yeah, look, if my top five, he would be getting my fifth place vote, probably. Just for recognition of what he did with that this season.
Obviously, we read your tweets, pardon me, throughout the show, but I just want to read this one from Bye Week Picks. So if you use this straw poll as sort of a indicator.
Again, it's 100 media members. I believe 100 media members. Not every one of them have votes. Some of them have votes. This is really just to give you a rough idea of what the media is looking at this race as.
Yeah. And this is a good way of doing it.
Yes.
This is fairly accurate. Bye Week Picks, for instance, says, question to the Futures Masters. I think he's talking about us. I have a substantial wager on Jokic to win the MVP race at about plus 450. Do you see any utility or insurance edge on Luka? My concern is voter fatigue and Joker sitting some games of late. But again, and so now that you see this, the answer to that would be, yeah, I wouldn't touch it. Not for Luka anyway.
I was going to say, I mean, if anything, maybe you're taking a little bit of Shea at 20-1, but only because he's 20-1. I don't even think I'd do anything with the ticket, though.
And isn't this stupid that they took it away from Jokic last year just so he couldn't have three in a row? And now he's back, 3 of 4. That we can live with, says the NBA voters.
It's absurd.
JBT, let's play a little should win, will win with him on all these NBA awards. His thoughts on the NBA tonight and College Hoops Final Four. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with the free VSiN Daily Newsletter. In today's newsletter,
we got Thule's take on the Final Four and Masters Primer coming at you. Released this morning at VSiN.com. Check it out.
Oh, wow. Get expert analysis, latest odds delivered straight to your inbox. Absolutely free. Visit VSiN.com/newsletter to subscribe. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. You see Thule, the picture that they had. Randy McKay and him went to... Andiamo's last night here at the D, and Thule's plate, they showed his plate, like, at a porterhouse and, like, massive gnocchi, and he, like, ate the whole thing.
I think he's one of those guys that, like, can tackle, like, the 40-ounce steaks.
Amazing. We get tweets at Beating the Book. I just want to go back to last night. These are all about Wembanyama. Troy Beal, there's no way Wembanyama's 14-1 in the morning. This is a Joe Flacco fake. He's winning this award. From your lips to God, as my mom used to say. The Truth, 1980. I just told my wife that Wemby almost had a quad double, and she replied, Gil is going to be so fired up tomorrow. She knows he's the defensive player of the year. I don't know if I believe that. Brandon Fear, 9 more blocks for Wemby. #DPOY. This is from Scott, New York Mets. 9 blocks against the defending champs. I cannot wait till his team plays some D so he gets respect. Ray. Even Jokic knows Wemby is defensive player of the year. Wemby talking about how he blocked him 4 times last night. I won't even say the name of this gentleman because I don't want to say something wrong. I don't know if this is a conspiracy theory or the actual reason they're no longer on the team. Oh, he's talking about that A's thing. There's 4 guys with who are wearing a paraphernalia supporting some shop that is anti-owners, and those A's, all the A's got demoted. Sorry about that. Jason, I've been taking the team total over for whoever the Rockies are playing. Only lost 1 so far. Guy on VSiN said to do it when they're at home. Thoughts? Well, no, it'll be adjusted for home, but it's a good thought in general because the Rockies are horrible. Dave sending out Wembanyama things. Jesse Welch, Wemby, DPOY. Come on, baby. Feeling like Joe Flacco comeback player of the year dilemma all over again. Anyway, on and on with stuff. Oh, and this is my favorite one. Roger Jones. Hi, Gil. New listener. What do you think of betting this rookie from the Spurs at 12-1 to win defensive player of the year? He had 9 blocks last night. Thanks in advance. It just keeps going with Wembanyama. JVT joins us, our senior NBA analyst, and of course the co-host of VSiN Primetime with Tim Murray every night here at the network. How you doing, John? What's happening?
I'm good. Baseball's here. Basketball season's almost coming to the postseason, to college basketball. There's so much going on. My Nashville Predators are red hot. Somebody convinced me to bet a ticket on them. Let's go. I'm in. I'm ready to go.
That's like being the Guardians. I'm borrowing them for a month from Adam Burke. That's it's all through our bets. All right, JBT, let us play Should Win, Will Win. Let's do this with NBA awards. Let's start with MVP.
Okay, should win, and I think they're both the same. Should win and will win will be Nikola Jokic. Look, he's a rightful favorite. The guy has been absolutely incredible. Yet again, when you look at his numbers, the efficiency from the floor, the on-court, off-court numbers, their net rating when he's on the floor, his contributions, yes, and on both ends. He is not, you know, I think we've gotten past the point talking about him a minus defender. Should win and will be Nikola Jokic. I don't think there's really any argument at this point right now.
Yeah, the straw poll that we just talked about from Tim Bontemps corroborates that. All right, most improved player. I'm interested in your thoughts on this.
So I think this is a little different. I think should win should be Kobe White. I think when you look at Kobe White and the leap that he has made from his last two seasons in the league, which he took a very strong downturn, was not playing very well, looked like he wasn't going to be a part of Chicago's plans going forward, to the leap that he has made up to this point right now is absolutely incredible. And he's playing at a near all-star level, and it should be part of like a future building block for the Chicago Bulls as we look forward, if he is going to play like this for the rest of his career. Will win is Tyrese Maxey. I don't agree with it. I think when you look at the leap that Tyrese Maxey made from his first to his second year, I don't know why then this leap from last year to this year is considered more most improved. He couldn't win it in his second year because he was a second year player. But I think given where Kobe White was at in his career last season, I think that he should win, but I don't think he will win.
The reason we do this is not only to get JBT's opinion, but to capture the disappointment in what we know is coming on some of these.
It's asinine. Like, oh, they're expected to make a leap. Not that kind of a leap. It's whatever.
Coach of the year. Should win. Will win.
This is interesting. So I think should and will are the same guy. Mark Daigneault's awesome. And what he's done with this team in terms of having them prepared almost every single game, guys. Like, there's not really a letdown for the Oklahoma City Thunder. You know, in recent days, they've kind of had a little bit of a step back, but that's because Shea's been dealing with a quad injury. But this team has not let go of the rope in any way, shape, or form. Being so young and still competing for a one seed, they're well schemed. They're a top 10 team in both offense and defense. So much of that has to do with what Daigneault does. I think should win and will win is Mark Daigneault. I'll throw in a caveat because he is definitely worth mentioning here. Jamal Mosley, I think, is a little bit more live than Chris Finch. What the Orlando Magic have done to get offensive geared players to buy in defensively, to potentially have a home court advantage in the Eastern Conference. This team's so well ahead of schedule. Mosley, I think, is very live to win this thing. But for me, can and should would be Mark Daigneault.
Sixth man.
Okay, so this is where I also have some feelings. So I would say should win, and I will readily admit that I am biased here. However, when you look at the players that are in the race for this award, when you're talking about the most efficient player by a pretty decent margin in Norman Powell, a guy who closes out games for the Los Angeles Clippers, and like when we're talking about closing games, like in clutch time is playing in these lineups because he is part of the most important lineup for them efficiency-wise, to me, it should be Norman Powell. However, will win it. Just judging by what we see in media and people's commentary, it looks like it's going to be Malik Monk. I think that missing this time down the stretch should make a difference because this race is very tight, whether you think it's Malik Monk, Norman Powell, or Naz Reid. But I still think that there are so many people, Gil, who view this award archaically as like, got to be the leading scorer off the bench, when in reality, your role as a sixth man should be more important than that. In fact, I think guys like Naz Reid should be getting more credit for playing well as a starter because a good sixth man can also fill the role of a starter if needed. Ooh. If somebody is injured. So I think that when you look at it, should win is Norman Powell, but will win is probably going to be Malik Monk because we can't look past scoring off of the bench.
Yeah, that sixth man thing is a conundrum with Naz. It's like Naz Reid. I'm sorry, he was a starter. You got to dismiss it. And then JBT saying the opposite.
Yeah, like, that was disaster last year. Right? Yeah. It was Brogdon win it because he was the true guy off the bench. Yeah. And not quickly because he started too many games.
Well, and Kelly, remember last year, so he quickly had to start one game off the bench down the stretch. He had like 45 points against the Celtics, and people were like, no, it doesn't count. And it's like, what makes a good backup quarterback? The fact that he could come in and start, right, if needed to be. It's the same thing here. Like, you shouldn't be discounted for making spot starts here and there and performing adequately. I think it's such a weird way of thinking about it.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. 10 seconds on clutch player of the year. Some people bet this.
Anything? let's go DeMar DeRozan because he's the odds-on favorite. Sure. I don't know if you want to do anything.
Yeah. All right. Drum roll. Defensive player of the year.
All right, so should win it. Derek White. No, I think when you look, I'll say this. I think Rudy Gobert, like, I think Victor Wembanyama deserves more credit for what he does defensively. And when you look at his on-court numbers with where the Spurs are at defensively, when he plays, you guys have mentioned the counting stats, blocks and rebounds, and the way that he has impacted this team when he is on the floor, he probably should win Defensive Player of the Year. I also want to state, though, that we should not lose sight of how good Rudy Gobert is defensively. And he is a very big reason why this Minnesota Timberwolves team is leading the league in defensive efficiency at this point right now. But I think if you actually looked at it with some nuance and you talked about literal defensive impact for a team that is as bad in a whole entire picture as the San Antonio Spurs, it probably should be Victor Wembanyama, but Rudy Gobert will win this because there's going to be those old heads. They're going to look at this and go, he's a rookie. He can't win Defensive Player of the Year. And that's what might get you.
Old heads. So ridiculous. NBA plays tonight. What do you got? Anything so far?
I've got a couple of things that I've got loaded up. We'll see if some of the line moves. Like, for example, the Lakers today are playing the Washington Wizards. Both teams coming off second legs of back-to-back. Darvin Ham told the media yesterday that both Anthony Davis and LeBron James are going to play tonight. LeBron James only got out of the game at like 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Anthony Davis didn't play in the fourth quarter. So while it's a negative scheduling spot, it's a little bit better for them because they weren't active in that fourth. And unlike the Milwaukee Bucks guys, the Lakers will take an opponent like Washington seriously. They got a plus 8.9 net rating, a non-garbage time against bottom teams in terms of net rating. They are 5-0 against those teams post All-Star break with a plus 13 net rating. They take care of business against these bad opponents. So if we get LeBron and Anthony Davis, I've been lied to before, so I want to make sure the Lakers are going to be a play there. The other ones that are on the list for me as well, Cleveland taking on Phoenix, similar situation, second leg of a back-to-back for Cleveland, but Donovan Mitchell didn't play yesterday. They took the night off, so you're going to get him out there. Hasn't been playing particularly well, but with the night off, starting to get his legs back underneath him, I can't figure out Phoenix for the life of me. They go lose to San Antonio, then they go on the road and blow out New Orleans. They're all over the place, but I still think the gap between these two teams, especially when Cleveland's at full strength, is a little bit tighter. So those are the two on the radar right now. And I throw out an honorable mention as well of what else was I looking at? Detroit. I took a different number. This number's gone, but I think Detroit's pretty live here against Atlanta. I still think it would be playable at about 11.5.
All right. Sorry to do this to you because we only have 20 seconds, but your thoughts on the two final four games would be?
Purdue. I'm going to wait to see if the number gets cheap, but I'm going to lay this thing with Purdue. You know, 8.5s are kind of out there, but Boilermakers, I've been riding the last few rounds. I'm going to do it again.
Not touching Alabama and UConn.
No, I don't want to. I want to bet Alabama, but I can't get in front of that train, man. I can't do it.
JVT, thank you as always. Appreciate it, man. That's great.
Good to talk to you guys. Thank you.
Jonathan Montobel at me, JVT, by the way, on the old Twitter machine. A little rapid fire. Should win, will win. A little baseball on the other side. No one has better numbers than Mark Borchard. We dive in next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Check out VSiN.com. Just a quick glance once again. Just looking at the top here. Valero Texas Open odds, picks, and predictions. We'll talk a little Valero Texas Open later on the show.
Yeah, we will. Masters Primer out today as well.
Masters Primer in there. Live Miami best bets and golf odds from Wes Reynolds. And, of course, just a plethora of NCAA tournament stuff. Also, that Michael Lombardi piece on Now or Never for Trevor, all at VSiN.com. Check it out. The new VSiN.com. Check it out today. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. So we mentioned the Stephon Diggs trade a little before we had Montesano on. So Stephon Diggs goes from the Buffalo Bills to the Houston Texans. What were the terms of the deal? Now we have a little more detail on this.
Yeah, so it's basically Diggs a fifth and a sixth to Houston for a second, I believe.
A second in 2025.
Correct. Yes.
Next year, second. So C.J. Stroud now has at his disposal not only Stephon Diggs, but of course, you know, talking from days gone by, Nico Collins and Tank Dell. So that's quite a nice little receiving core now for C.J. Stroud.
Is, yeah.
On the other hand, if you're Buffalo, you get out from under his contract, Stephon Diggs' contract, which I think they're probably thrilled about in Buffalo at this point. But if you look at their current roster,
yeah,
and we're, what, April 3rd, we have a draft in front of us, and obviously there's still time to pick up other randos. But if you look at their just their depth chart at wide receiver.
Curtis Samuel, welcome to number one.
Curtis Samuel becomes your wide receiver one.
Who else?
Curtis
we got
Samuel,
there?
former Panther, former Skin.
Mac Hollins, of course. Yeah,
Khalil Shakir, and Khalil Shakir is probably your number two. But I mean, the rest of them are what? Shorter and Hollins and Hamler and those kind of guys.
Yeah, they gotta make some additions, we'll say.
Yeah, they got to.
I think they'll be targeting that in the draft where there's supposed to be about 20 first-round wide receivers.
Of course, they have two great tight ends in Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox as well, but still at wide out, a little thin now.
Yeah.
Whereas Houston is robust. I still like the under on Houston, though. Based on the
I'm a big Josh Allen guy. I don't know. This whole Diggs thing, whatever's been going on there the past year or 2 years now, I'm wondering if they might be better moving on from him.
Diggs is just always upset on the sidelines, just always angry about something.
And then there were games late in the year where he wasn't really a factor.
He was very ineffective this past season.
I mean, and then the drop. Oh, on that Josh Allen, 70-yard bomb right on the dot.
Oh, yeah.
And just, boop, couldn't haul it in. Could have been one of the greatest plays we've ever seen in football. And he hauls that in, can't catch it.
Draft props are not robust quite yet, but we do have some interesting markets, specifically about specific players to specific teams.
Yeah.
Which team will draft J.J. McCarthy? This is available at DraftKings.
This got steamed big time yesterday. Yeah, yesterday.
Vikings are the short shot at +105, followed by the Giants at +275. The Commodores are 3-1. Patriots +350, and then Broncos are +550. Everybody else, and by everybody else, I mean only one listed here, the Raiders.
Yeah, 30, no, everybody else. 35-1 or longer, yeah.
Okay, the Vikings got steamed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you, but I have seen in a few of the mocks I've been kind of reading up on recently that it seems to be a strong belief the Vikings are going to trade up into that top 10 and take McCarthy. And the most popular one I've heard is the Chargers spot at number five they would trade into to grab him.
Would they have to? The Chargers wouldn't have to trade in to grab him at all. They could just sit at five and grab him probably, unless someone's bonus, you know, doing a smokescreen thing. Here's the thing. Vikings currently have the 11th pick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does J.J. McCarthy fall to 11? I can't believe I'm saying
to
11.
I know. It's
but
crazy.
That's the way that it's being talked about now. He would have to fall to 11.
So, yeah, that's,
the Chargers are at 5.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. The Vikings, I think what people are thinking is the Vikings need to trade up to that spot to get ahead of the Giants.
Gotcha.
Because the Giants might take
Chargers it. The Chargers were not listed there because they have Justin Herbert on that J.J. McCarthy list. As fond of J.J. McCarthy as Jim Harbaugh is, I would think that Jim Harbaugh is good. I mean, to me, the most connected team to a specific player, to me, is the Chargers and Joe Alt. I think it's clear they're going offensive linemen. So that to me is the biggest thing. Now it should be mentioned that we were here a week ago.
Man, I hope you're wrong because I've got that's where I've got neighbors going.
you have them drafting neighbors. Well, that could be.
But I agree with you. I think one of those positions is where they're going to.
I'm just saying if you're going to dive into one of these markets and you made me do one of them right now, that would be mine. The J.J. McCarthy thing, again, all of this is lying season, right? Because a week ago, wasn't even a week ago. Remember we were all that steam on McCarthy to go number two to Washington? So that quickly has died down a little bit.
Yep.
You know who had a pretty...
I mean, it hasn't, right? I think the overall sentiment that he's still going to go way sooner than we would have thought right a month ago seems to be... I mean, at this point, it kind of seems like it's going to happen from everything we're hearing.
You know what's the best line about J.J. McCarthy going second is, and I don't quote him often on the show, is Bomani Jones. Mm. Bomani Jones has a line about that. He goes, about the buzz of J.J. McCarthy going second to Washington. He goes, here's how I know J.J. McCarthy is not going second to Washington. He goes, because if J.J. McCarthy was going second to Washington, J.J. McCarthy would be going first. And his point there is that if you are that enamored by a guy, pardon me, who won a national championship, your narrative for loving J.J. McCarthy is he won a national championship, he made all the right decisions when he was asked to make plays, he made all the right plays, right? So it's not what was on the field, but it was he played as great as you can for what he was asked to do at the right times, and they won a title.
Right.
And so I understand his point. His point is, if you buy into that so much as he is worthy of the number two pick, well, then why isn't he the number one pick either? That's his take on that. And so there is a little kernel of wisdom in that where it's like, yeah, no, I agree with that. He's not going to be one or two, is my point.
Yeah. And I get that. It is interesting.
So that's why the Vikings and other teams.
Yeah, because you've got special playmakers at the top, right?
Yeah.
With what we would consider Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels.
The Bo Nix thing is interesting.
Because this one is just as interesting to me.
Because the Broncos are really the only team that falls under the category of has shown tremendous interest in Bo Nix.
Like to a minus 150
to
effect?
Minus 150. Wow. Vikings 4-1, Raiders 5-1, Giants 7-1. But you get to, you know, if you hadn't had a feel for who's going to draft a quarterback or who covers a quarterback, it's the usual suspects towards the top of these. Vikings, Raiders, Giants.
Right, yeah. All the quarterback needy teams makes sense, but like, I don't know, for this one to manifest, like there's a lot of different things that's got to go on for Denver to get in a position to get him.
Denver's at 12 currently.
Yeah, like, I mean, is it, I don't know. Like, are they?
Wait, but Denver doesn't have to trade up.
No, I'm not necessarily saying that, but you still got to wait for 11 picks to come off the board, and then everybody's assumed there's no other trades that happen, nothing else, where this guy's just going to fall to him at 12. I'm just not running to play minus 150 like that.
He would be the fifth quarterback selected at 12 if they got him at 12, assuming Michael Penix wouldn't, you know, go before that. So it's just like, yeah, on the one hand, I hear what you're saying. On the other hand, really, like the five are going to be picked before 12?
It's insane. I know, it's insane. I'm really wish I would have bet that the over 4.5 heavier than I did.
Over 4.5 on quarterback.
Yeah, because when those markets opened, I bet them both in town just to pick up some free money, because it was over 4.5 and even money, and then under 4.5 in another shop here at plus 115. But that, like, there's five. Five are going.
Of all the draft wisdom we have imparted, and I'm sure it's not just us over the years, the single most just consistently right one is teams justifiably, right? They go crazy for quarterbacks. Yeah. Quarterback needy teams go crazy for quarterbacks. They go Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs for quarterbacks in the first round because what's the Chris Collinsworth line? Most important position in football is quarterback. Second most important position is backup quarterback. Like, you're nothing without a quarterback. You're nothing. And if you don't have it, you are just a different category.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's justifiable, and they pray. Now, the talent assessment of this is the other side of it, which is that is the most inexact science there is. So on the one hand, you're justified going after it. On the other hand, there is rarely any, like, the success rate of actually picking the right guy is super low. And as our buddy Matt Brown has said, which I think is accurate, Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow specifically in modern times, and I went through it. Remember, I went draft by draft since that draft. Nobody has drafted well, with the exception of, you know, Trevor Lawrence was the first pick in the draft. He's the only quarterback since Burrow and Herbert were drafted that has done anything in this league. So it's the most inexact science there is.
And even that.
And even with that, they're still going to go crazy drafting these guys. So I don't know. I don't have any thoughts. I wouldn't recommend a bet on either of these at this point.
I would recommend not betting the favorites in both of these markets right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't lay minus 150 on the Broncos, that's for sure. We'll come back. The injury reporting in the NBA and what to do with the Sixers, specifically beyond that. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Check out VSiN.com. Just a quick glance once again. Just looking at the top here. Valero Texas Open. Odds, picks, and predictions. We'll talk a little Valero Texas Open later on the show.
Yeah, we will. Masters Primer out today as well.
Masters Primer in there. Live Miami best bets and golf odds from Wes Reynolds. And, of course, just a plethora of NCAA tournament stuff. Also, that Michael Lombardi piece on Now or Never for Trevor, all at VSiN.com. Check it out. The new VSiN.com. Check it out today. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. So we mentioned the Stephon Diggs trade a little before we had Montesano on. So Stephon Diggs goes from the Buffalo Bills to the Houston Texans. What were the terms of the deal? Now we have a little more detail on this.
Yeah, so it's basically Diggs a fifth and a sixth to Houston for a second, I believe.
A second in 2025.
Correct, correct. Yes,
next year, second. Yeah. So C.J. Stroud now has at his disposal not only Stephon Diggs, but of course, you know, talking from days gone by, Nico Collins and Tank Dell. So that's quite a nice little receiving core now for C.J. Stroud.
Is, yeah.
On the other hand, if you're Buffalo, you get out from under his contract, Stephon Diggs' contract, which I think they're probably thrilled about in Buffalo at this point. But if you look at their current roster,
yeah,
and we're, what, April 3rd, we have a draft in front of us, and obviously there's still time to pick up other randos. But if you look at their, just their depth chart at wide receiver.
Curtis Samuel, welcome to number one.
Curtis Samuel becomes your wide out, your wide receiver one?
Yeah, who else
Curtis
we got
Samuel,
there?
Former Panther, former Skin.
Mac Hollins, of course, yeah.
Khalil Shakir, and Khalil Shakir is probably your number two. But, I mean, the rest of them are what? Shorter and Hollins and Hamler and those kind of guys.
Yeah, they got to make some additions, we'll say.
Yeah, they got to.
I think they'll be targeting that in the draft where there's supposed to be about 20 first-round wide receivers.
Of course, they have two great tight ends in Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox as well. But still, at wide out, a little thin now.
Yeah.
Whereas Houston is robust. I still like the under on Houston, though, based on the
season. Yeah. I'm a big Josh Allen guy. This whole Diggs thing, whatever's been going on there the past year or 2 years now, I'm wondering if they might be better moving on from him.
Diggs is just always upset on the sidelines, just always angry about something.
And then there were games late in the year where he wasn't really a factor.
He was very ineffective this past season.
I mean, and then the drop. Oh, on that Josh Allen-like 70-yard bomb right on the dot.
Oh, yeah.
And just, boop, couldn't haul it in. Could have been one of the greatest plays we've ever seen in football. And he hauls that in, can't catch it.
Draft props are not robust quite yet, but we do have some interesting markets, specifically about specific players to specific teams.
Yeah.
Which team will draft at J.J. McCarthy? This is available at DraftKings.
This got steamed big time yesterday. Yeah, yesterday.
Vikings are the short shot at plus 105, followed by the Giants at plus 275. The Commodores are 3-1. Patriots plus 350, and then Broncos are plus 550. Everybody else, and by everybody else, I mean only one listed here, the Raiders.
Yeah, 30, no, everybody else. 35-1 or longer, yeah.
Okay, the Vikings got steamed.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I have seen in a few of the mocks I've been kind of reading up on recently that it seems to be a strong belief the Vikings are going to trade up into that top 10 and take McCarthy. And the most popular one I've heard is the Chargers spot at number five they would trade into to grab him.
Would they have to? The Chargers wouldn't have to trade in to grab him at all. They could just sit at five and grab him probably, unless someone's bonus, you know, doing a smokescreen thing. Here's the thing. Vikings currently have the 11th pick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does J.J. McCarthy fall to 11? I can't believe I'm saying fall
no,
to 11.
I know. It's
but
crazy.
Like, that's the way that it's being talked about now. He would have to fall to 11.
So, yeah,
the Chargers are at 5.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. The Vikings, I think what people are thinking is the Vikings need to trade up to that spot to get ahead of the Giants.
Gotcha.
Because the Giants might take
Chargers it. The Chargers were not listed there because they have Justin Herbert on that J.J. McCarthy list. As fond of J.J. McCarthy as Jim Harbaugh is, I would think that Jim Harbaugh is good. I mean, to me, the most connected team to a specific player, to me, is the Chargers and Joe Alt. I think it's clear they're going offensive linemen. So that to me is the biggest thing. Now it should be mentioned that what we were here a week ago.
Man, I hope you're wrong because I've got that's where I've got neighbors going.
you have them drafting neighbors. Well, that could be.
But I agree with you. I think one of those positions is where they're going
to. I'm just saying if you're going to dive into one of these markets and you made me do one of them right now, that would be mine. The J.J. McCarthy thing, again, all of this is lying season, right? Because a week ago, wasn't even a week ago. Remember we were all that steam on McCarthy to go number two to Washington? So that quickly has died down a little bit. You know who had a pretty...
It hasn't, right? I think the overall sentiment that he's still going to go way sooner than we would have thought right a month ago seems to be... I mean, at this point, it kind of seems like it's going to happen from everything we're hearing.
You know what's the best line about J.J. McCarthy going second is, and I don't quote him often on the show, is Bomani Jones. Mm. Bomani Jones has a line about that. He goes, about the buzz of J.J. McCarthy going second to Washington. He goes, here's how I know J.J. McCarthy is not going second to Washington. He goes, because if J.J. McCarthy was going second to Washington, J.J. McCarthy would be going first. And his point there is that if you are that enamored by a guy, pardon me, who won a national championship, your narrative for loving J.J. McCarthy is he won a national championship, he made all the right decisions when he was, and when he was asked to make plays, he made all the right plays, right? So it's not what was on the field, but it was he played as great as you can for what he was asked to do at the right times, and they won a title.
Right.
And so I understand his point. His point is if you buy into that so much as he is worthy of the number two pick, well, then why isn't he the number one pick either? That's his take on that. And so there is a little kernel of wisdom in that where it's like, yeah, no, I agree with that. He's not going to be one or two is my point.
Yeah. And I get that. It is interesting.
So that's why the Vikings and other teams.
Yeah, because you've got special playmakers at the top, right?
Yeah.
With what we would consider Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels.
The Bo Nix thing is interesting. Because
this one is just as interesting to me.
Because the Broncos are really the only team that falls under the category of has shown tremendous interest in Bo Nix.
Like to a -150
effect? -150. Wow. Vikings 4-1, Raiders 5-1, Giants 7-1. But you get to, you know, if you hadn't had a feel for who's going to draft a quarterback or who covets a quarterback, it's the usual suspects towards the top of these. Vikings, Raiders,